My name is Philip Yanos. I'm a professor, mental health advocate, and New Yorker. Welcome to Exiles in the City, a podcast focused on topics related to the treatment of marginalized groups in urban areas. The podcast takes inspiration from my book, Exiles in New York City, Warehousing the Marginalized on Ward's Island, which was published by Columbia University Press this past April. The book can be ordered online and found at local bookstores in New York. Thank you for tuning in. I'm honored to welcome Sasha Altman-Dubrule as my second guest today. Though he currently lives in Los Angeles, Sasha is a native New Yorker, writer, educator, social worker, lived experience activist, and musician. He's widely known as the co-founder of the Icarus Project, a radical community support network and media project that redefined the language and culture of mental health and illness and impacted the lives of thousands between roughly 2002 and 2020 when it was rebranded as the Fireweed Collective. He's the author of the book Maps to the Other Side, The Adventures of a Bipolar Cartographer, which was published by Microcosm Publishing in 2013, and the recent Dangerous Gifts, Using Internal Family Systems to Channel Your Madness and Transform Your Life zine series, also published by Microcosm in 2025. He has a Master's of Social Work degree and previously worked as a peer specialist supervisor for the New York State Psychiatric Institute, and now runs an independent counseling and coaching therapy practice, which you can get information about at sashadubrule.com. He's a prolific Substack writer, and I always look forward to reading his latest thoughts on issues related to mental health and the mental health system. He also played bass in the New York City ska punk band Choking Victim in the early 90s, and we share a connection to the punk rock and mental health interface, which led us both to be interviewed for the book Screen Therapy, A Punk Journey Through Mental Health, authored by Jason Schurz, which came out in 2023. Thank you so much for joining me, Sasha.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here with you, Phil.
Awesome. Okay, so let me kick into my first question, which hopefully will start our discussion. You've written so much on topics that are of great interest to me, so there are a lot of things which we could talk about. But since this podcast focuses on issues surrounding marginalized groups and urban environments, I wanted to start by talking about your experience with urban environments and what some people call extreme states or psychosis. You've written about your first episode of an extreme state happening in New York City when you were 18 years old. Which you say you were walking on the subway tracks, convinced the world was about to end, and that you were being broadcast live on primetime TV on all the channels. At that time, there were only about five of those, right? But you describe being wrestled to the ground by police before being taken to Bellevue Hospital. So, you know, the urban environment is a big part of this experience, and there's a fair amount of evidence that the stimulation of the urban environment can impact extreme states. However, you've also written about how you found community and support in the anarchist punk squatter community of New York City's Lower East Side at the time and around that time. And this possibly saved you from getting sucked into the identity of being a mental patient after you had this hospitalization, and maybe even laid the groundwork for everything that you've done since, which has helped so many others. So the urban environment seems to be a double-edged sword for people who are sensitive or who deviate from the mainstream. So what are your thoughts about this? And what do you think New York City specifically can do to better support people who are sensitive or who deviate from the mainstream?
Wow. It's such an honor to be on your podcast, Phil. I really appreciate that you've taken the time to engage with my thinking and writing. So let's see, where do we start? The urban environment. So I am a product of urban peoples. I'm a product
right.
of
my
yeah. Yeah. my mom was raised on a street in what they call, is it the East Bronx or the South Bronx? I think they called it, you know, the East Bronx when she was growing up. And her family were all They were Greek Jews. They were Roman Yote Jews, right?
Right. Greek speaking Jews.
Greek speaking Jews.
Different from Sephardic Jews who spoke Ladino as their first
Yeah,
language.
exactly. Yeah, my great grandparents, came from a town called Yanina, and came to the Lower East Side in the early part of the 20th century, and yeah, made their way. The family made their way up to Harlem and eventually the Bronx, and then eventually my grandparents. When I was a kid, they lived in a neighborhood called Co-op City in the North Bronx that my mom actually worked in. But so that's my mom's side, and then my dad was from Elmhurst, Queens, and he was Irish Catholic. He had a French Canadian. My last name, De Brule, is French Canadian. I'm like those Chicano kids that can't speak Spanish. Like, I can't even pronounce my last name, De Brule. I don't even know how he, all these years later.
You never got a proper tutorial on
I
it.
never did. I'd like, I feel like that's a, but this is the thing. You're talking about the urban environment. Like, what makes the urban environment urban is that it's all these people from all these different places all smushed together, right? So I was a kid. Both my parents came from the working class, and they made their way up back in the days when New York, when you could still get a free college education. My parents, were in that generation where they both had decent paying jobs, and they moved to Manhattan, and they moved
Were
to
they products of this great university that I work for?
They were so my dad went to Hunter College, and my mom went to CUNY.
All right. Hunter's part of CUNY.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
So they
it's
were
all.
products of it when it was the free university, right? Before tuition started to be charged in the 70s when the fiscal crisis occurred.
Exactly. And actually, my dad wrote a book in 1977 called The Abuse of Power, The Permanent Government, and the Fall of New York. He wrote it with his friend Jack Newfield, who was from Bedford-Stuyvesant, which when I was growing up was a black neighborhood, but there was a lot of Jews there. Jack Newfield was from Bed-Stuy, and they
And just
wrote
as an aside, your father coined that term, the permanent government,
the permanent
which has been
government.
used a lot, right?
Has it? I don't know. I'm
It
not in
has
the
been.
circle
It
for
has
that.
been
I'm
quite
not
a
around
bit.
people who use. Yeah.
I hear it
Okay.
tossed all the time, and I don't know if your father's credited.
Paul Anthony De
Yeah.
Brule. Yeah. He died in 1987. But I mean, I think the thing is that the double-edged sword of the urban environment. I mean, in many ways, yeah. I've read the same studies that you have about the rates of psychosis for immigrants and for people living in urban areas, that it's much higher. And yet there's something really powerful about having so many different kinds of people all living near each other, and the kind of intersections that happen because of that. So I grew up in Manhattan, and I was like a very urban kid. I was a middle class kid growing up on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, and my dad died. My dad actually died the night before my bar mitzvah, which is like very much. It was very dramatic.
Yeah,
Let's
for
just say
sure.
that it was very dramatic.
Right.
But as a young teenager, I found myself. I met. I was going to Bronx High School of Science, and I met these girls in my high school, and they brought me down to the Lower East Side to an anarchist meeting on 9th Street, right off of Tompkins Square Park, in a place called the Anarchist Switchboard. The year was 1989.
Which was a heavy year in New York, right? That's the year of Do the Right Thing, and a lot of things were happening that summer and that year.
Yeah, actually, it's funny you say that. I remember going to see Do the Right Thing with my mom the day that it came out.
Never forget seeing that movie.
Actually, that was like a really, yeah, that was like a, yeah, man. I mean, New York, complicated place. It's like a million different faces. If we could just like step outside of this conversation for a second and just say, like, the human experience, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, is so intense because we, in some ways, we're individuals, but in some ways, we are the accumulation of so much evolutionary history, And so we see ourselves as individuals, but when we're surrounded by other people, I'll say it like this, Phil. Do you ever remember your dreams?
Very rarely, but yeah, sometimes I do.
I'm sitting in an office right now. I have 30 years of my journals on the walls. I've been writing my dreams down for 30 years. So like whatever, I take them seriously. They say this thing about your dreams when you're dreaming, everyone in your dream is just a reflection of yourself. You ever hear that?
I thought of that it was just more of like a reflection of things that were on your mind during the day. But you're saying all the characters, all the
All the
people.
characters, everyone is a reflection of yourself. Yeah. And I mean, I don't listen, man. I do a lot of like talking to people about psychosis and trying to explain what psychosis is. I know I'm like kind of jumping here, but the way if I was gonna like explain psychosis to someone who has not experienced it, which they it's like dreaming while you're awake.
Exactly what I say to people too, right? Now, I
Yeah,
haven't
true.
experienced it, but that's my understanding of what it's like. Yeah, and we
Yeah,
can all anybody who has ex who's dreamt can connect to the experience to some extent.
exactly. And so what, like some there's a Joseph Campbell quote I often find myself saying, the psychotic drowns in the water that the mystic swims in with delight, you know. So anyway, to go back to this thing about the urban environment, yeah, it's incredible. I mean, I love it. I love the city, you know. When I'm doing well, when I'm like feeling grounded, man, my favorite thing to do, like literally my favorite thing to do, is to get on the subway in New York City and just like ride and just watch the people get on and off. I love at rush hour. I love being on the subway at rush hour and just feeling all these people like all like who are like trying not to look at each other, but I'm a very sensitive guy and I can feel the I just like people, man.
Right.
I
So
just
feeling that connection with people, with your fellow struggling
humans.
human, right?
Humans. Yeah.
Who's dealing with the same stuff that you're dealing with, right? You can see everybody's doing the same thing. They're going to school, they're going to work, you know.
They're in a dream. I mean, that's the thing is
You feel connected to them.
we're all caught in our dreams. So the idea was, I mean, at least in my mind at this juncture, I'm like 50 years old now. I'm like, I want everyone to be in the same dream. You know, I want everyone to like, I want us all to be able to like see from the same perspectives. And in order to do that, in order to be able to see from the same perspectives, we need to be able to understand each other, you know?
So the alienation, though, it seems like it's even more profound, you know, just as that connection is more profound, right? From being around other people and seeing so many people, different walks of life, different places of origin, the alienation can be maybe more profound as well if something goes awry in that.
Listen, I've had periods of my life where I was suicidally depressed, where all I could think about was fucking killing myself, you know? And why was that? It was because I felt like I was like cast out of the human experience, like that I didn't belong, that there was something about me that was rejected. There was something about me that was like, I am the most horrible person in the world. If people could see inside my head, they would realize that I am just like the most horrible person ever. And so that same experience I described of being on the subway when I'm like grounded and doing well turns into a nightmare because I look at everyone and I'm like, they all, you know, if they all know. And I'm a therapist now, so I talk to lots of people about this kind of stuff. There's a line between if they only knew and they all know, you know, like that's the feeling for someone who's really, you know, experiencing paranoia. It's they're like they can see the thoughts in my head, and you know. So yeah, I love the humans. I am a very grateful human. I feel like the fact that we managed to get to this point in the planet, that we're here and we can engage with each other and communicate, we must have been doing something right to end up here. You know what I mean? The whole way they think about what mental health and mental illness is needs to be restructured. I mean, we can talk. I read your book, and I appreciate all of your thoughts about policy, but that's not really that. That's not where I thrive. I thrive in thinking about like large scale systemic, like social paradigm shifting changes, you know, like
Right.
that's what
So even bigger. So what
yeah.
would be your very big picture suggestion for places like New York and LA, you know?
Well, look, there's like the let's take New York because I can kind of wrap my head around it a little better than LA. I've been in LA for 3 years, but this is not where I'm from. The first thing I think is I think about all the people right now who either don't have jobs or who have jobs that they don't like, or that, you know, that are not in, and aren't even really paying the bills or whatever. It's like I would restructure the whole way. I think about like how much if you put people in a situation where they can actually do good, where they can actually take care of other people, they'll do it. You know? I think if you put people in a situation where they're like, you're fucking paying them, like not even paying them a living wage, and then I'm thinking about the peer worker, you know, like, you know, and then there's all these like all this fucking bullshit jargon rules, like baggage that comes along with like the mental health system, and like people have these terrible words in their mouths where like, well, I'm someone with a mental health re I'm in mental health recovery, I'm in recovery from my mental illness. I'm just like, fuck all that. I like what if we started from a really different place? What if we started talking about mutual aid? What if we started talking about how everyone has feelings and emotions and things that they scare them inside of them? What if we trained people? What if we created here, you're this is literally like just off the cuff, okay? What if we created training centers? What if we created, what if there was somehow funding to create training centers for people where they went and there had been people who were had people like me who had been diagnosed, you know, I've been diagnosed with a serious mental illness and had all this shit happen to me. And I've been, tr I'm like, I mean, I'm self-trained in a lot of ways, but because I've been part of social movements that have really nurtured me for like 30 years, I am part a vision and a kind of, there's like, if you took that vision and you created a framework for it and you were like, okay, what, okay, off the top of my head, I'm thinking about like there's some country in Africa where they were paying like old women to sit on benches and just like talk to people, be there to talk, you know? What if you did that? What if you like, you know, there's all these old folks that have all these lived experiences of all kinds of stuff. What if you paired them up with young people to record their stories and then you like made media out of that? And then what if like all of these people who are like supposedly so fucking mentally ill, you know, and then they're like taking these drugs. And just to be clear, for anyone out there who is listening who hasn't like read my writing before and know my deal, I actually take psychiatric drugs every day of my life, and I'm like really grateful for them. I take a drug called lithium carbonate. Sometimes I take a drug called Seroquel. It helps me sleep sometimes when I can't sleep. But like, there's a lot of people who's on, they're on way too many drugs. They're doing way too many drugs. Like they're, you know, like because they don't have the way our system is set up, people don't get support. They don't get services. And so instead they just get like, you know, these high powered antipsychotic drugs that they're like get forced to get monthly injections, you know. So, but whatever, we could like critique the system all we want. You asked, what do I think we should do to change it? How can we make it better? We need to create an infrastructure where people can actually get together in groups and talk to each other. But it has to be based in some way. It has to be based in some way on a framework that's not the framework that we're living in. We're living in this like cutthroat capitalist edge of neoliberalism, like literally fascist. Like we're literally living, you know, in like we're anyone who's listening to this in 2025, we're watching the rise of fascism in North America. What if New York City became an example where we were like, yeah, we're not going to do that. What we're not going to do that. We're actually going to we're going to reframe things. And what if we were to say, fundamentally, everyone is good. I mean, I think
Right.
that's the heart of it. That's like the what it comes down to is like we have to understand that like everyone is good. Even the person that scares you that you see on the subway that looks all scary, even if they're like look all threatening at you, yeah, you know what? They probably had a really hard life. There's this idea, Carl Jung has this idea, he talks about the concept of the shadow. Right, the idea is like you and I are talking right now, where I'm pontificating about whatever I'm saying. Oh, I think I'm so intelligent, blah blah blah. You know, my shadow is everything that I don't identify with. My shadow is all the parts of myself that, you know, whatever that I'm not that I'm not in touch with. Everybody has a shadow, right? And then there's like social shadows, there's society shadows, right? And like in this context, in New York City in 2025, when you're walking down the street and you see folks who are dirty and they're talking to themselves and they're living, there's cardboard, they're doing, you know, they're the society shadows. They're the parts of the society that no one wants to look at, you know? And so they don't look at them. And why is it that they don't look at them? Is it because that they're scared of them? Maybe there's some fear there, but part of it is this, like, they look at it and they're like, some part of it deep down, and I'm talking to you, whoever's listening to this right now and like tuned in to what we're saying, some part of it is you look at a person who's like clearly having a very hard time. Clearly, they obviously got a lot of issues, and some part of you looks at them and thinks, that could be me. That could be me, you know?
And this is leading to my next question, which I think is, speaks to this on a bigger level, if it's okay, which is that, there's been an executive order that came out on July 24th, very recently, right? We're doing this on August 4th, so, just 2 weeks away from that. And it really speaks very directly to this idea of wanting to keep people away, right, who cause this discomfort, I guess. And so, Ward's Island, which I talk about in the book, is really kind of like a perfect example of the kind of setting that they would like people to be in, right? So the executive order was called Ending Crime and Disorder on America's Streets. And it basically proposes greater use of involuntary psychiatric holds and institutionalization, a rollback of existing legal protections that limit forced interventions, and eliminating federal support for Housing First, which is the only evidence-based intervention for decreasing homelessness among single adults with mental health conditions. So in your Substack post, you commented on it in a way that's similar to what you just talked about. You said that underneath all of this is a collective shadow that no one wants to face, the deep fear and loathing of madness, of need, of grief, of difference. This society projects onto others everything it refuses to metabolize: vulnerability, rage, collapse, vision. So this really resonated with me. So I'm wondering just a little bit about how you felt when you heard about the executive order. I mean, it caught me as, I was pretty shocked that they actually went ahead and did it. I knew they were thinking it, but I was pretty shocked. So just wondering about what your reaction was when you heard about it.
I mean, okay, look, this is, we could talk policy, but like I said, it's not my strong suit. So I'm going to tell you my perspective. And for anyone out there listening, I hope maybe you've never heard anyone talk about this, but I hope more people will start talking like this soon. I am a practitioner of a therapy model called IFS, or Internal Family Systems, which is actually based on systemic family therapy, what I was just talking about before, doing the open dialogue treatment stuff with families. The basic idea of internal family systems is that everybody has a bunch of parts. So we were just talking about the beauty of individuality, right? Like, it's wonderful that we're also individual. That's great. Also, each one of those individuals, including you, including me, including everyone listening to this, we all have multiple parts. And those parts are not like, they're not like physical parts. They're like in our psyche, you know, they're in our consciousness. And those parts have relationships with each other. Okay. So that that's like the basic idea of internal family systems. And the other piece about it is that every single fucking human being alive, all of the everyone in New York City, everyone across the world, everyone,
Including the president.
including Donald Trump, including that guy, everybody has a self, and that self is fundamentally curious and compassionate and creative and courageous and calm and and yeah, even Donald Trump, somewhere down in there, that guy's got all that stuff, but he has a lot of baggage. But when we start talking about how we all have multiple parts, everybody has multiple parts. There's a couple different kinds of parts, okay? And I can just say there are two different kinds of parts to make it easy. There's like manager parts that are just trying to like take care of things, make sure everything works out, to do the daily stuff that we do. We do our podcasts and we do our work and we do, we're, and then we have exiled parts. All right. And this is how I'm going to answer your question, because you asked me a question about like, what do what's going on with this executive order? What do you think happened? I think that everybody has exiled parts. And I think that like our society has like whole sections of the population that play the role of exiles. Whole sections of society that play the role of exiles. And I think people who struggle with serious mental illness are like the quintessential example of exiles who like don't, who like they're carrying the pain of the world, and the world as it's set up is happy for them to carry it, is happy for them to carry it. And like the thing is, like I was, we could talk about the family structure. We could talk about, a organization. We could talk about your school, John Jay. We could talk, or we could talk about a neighborhood or a whole city. They're like these same structures play out. These same dynamics play out. There's always exiled parts, and then there's managerial parts. And the idea, from to my way of thinking, and what I do in my daily therapy practice with people, is to help people figure out what their exiles are and give voice to them. Let them get, like, give voice to them. So this is what I think about this fucking executive order. I think these people are very misguided, but it's kind of the natural way things happen. Shit, like, we've let it get this bad, right? There was the checks and balances, and there was like somehow someone, a bunch of people did a bunch of work, so I got a job in the psych system, like somehow you were working, at the school. Like institutions are not like inherently bad, but the checks and balances are all off. Like,
So we're all responsible to some extent for this as part of this system.
yeah, well, yeah, we're all responsible for it, but I mean, obviously the people who have power are a lot more responsible for it. I mean, I feel like the like average like folks who are just like going to work, that I wouldn't put it on them. But I think the thing that we wanna emphasize here is that, look, there's no way that they're like, what they're trying to do, they can't do
Okay, that's
it.
encouraging.
Yeah, what you think it's just gonna, like, man, I wouldn't even be able to get up and get out of bed in the morning if I actually thought that they were gonna be victorious in this. I just don't.
Yeah, so what suggestions do you have for people who are upset and want to get involved? To change the direction, especially with regard to, this kind of proposal for mental health policy. I know there's so many different levels that we can act on, but what general suggestion would you give to people who are listening who want to get involved?
I'd probably like, channel some Saul Alinsky or something, and I just say, like, first of all, if you're really upset about this, what's your relationship like with your neighbors? What's your night? I'm picturing like your audience for this podcast. I'm imagining them in New York City, but I'm sure there'll be
Right.
people in other places
Probably
too.
mostly, yeah.
Like, who are your neighbors? Who are you? Like, I know I can tell you part of what drove me out of New York City was that I was working all the time and I didn't even have time to fucking talk to my neighbors. I mean, there's such a grind. I think, okay, let's step back and I'll just briefly I'll briefly describe to you what life was like for me when I was a young teenager, because I think it'll be helpful for us to think about this. So there I was. Let's go back to 1989 or whatever. And, I went down to the Lower East Side. At that time, the Lower East Side had on every single block in the East Village, that area, like from Avenue A, B, C, D, from 14th Street to Houston Street, there was buildings that had been abandoned, often burned, that people had taken over and were living in. So there's all these people down there who were not paying rent, okay? And there was Tompkins Square Park was the only park in New York City that didn't have a curfew, and there's like a ton of people hanging out on the park every day. There was homeless people that would set up camps, but then there was also like just there was a culturally it was like a very vibrant place. It was probably a little dangerous. I think my mom was really upset that I was cutting school and spending a lot of time down there, but it was a very interesting place. But part of why it worked was that there had been a significant crisis in the city, and so this like workaday thing of everyone having to like work so hard to fucking just pay rent and not have time to even talk to anyone, well, people were talking to each other more, people were talking to each other more, and things were interesting. Things were happening. It wasn't all super positive. There was like there's a lot of drugs. There's a lot of heroin, crack. Like you remember, but there was possibility because people weren't so, some basic things were taken care of. And I think in general, if you look at like the history, the recent history of the United States, like in the 60s and 70s, yeah, there was like the reason there was so much ability for people to gather and for people to be able to create things and for people to be able to build stuff with each other was because people weren't there wasn't as much of a people weren't struggling quite so much, like financially. There was economic downturns, but also things didn't cost as much. And we're obviously living now in a time where we're like it's like economic precarity. People are scared that they're going to lose what they have. People are paying exorbitant rents just to be able to stay in the city and not get pushed out. And I think some things are going to have to change. Like things are going to have to change, and part of that hopefully will be some better government will come in and help with that. But also, there's going to be crisis. Like that's the reality of it. There's going to be crisis. Like we don't even know, imagine rolling blackouts. That's my first memory is actually of like the blackout in 1977. That's like my it's like a baby, I was two and a half. But I think, look at the stuff that comes out of crisis. What do they say about that blackout in 1977? That's like where the origins of hip hop. Like everyone talks about that, like because suddenly there was all these stores that were looted,
People
and
had machines they could use to mix things and stuff,
yeah,
right?
exactly. And it's like, so I think the thing for anyone who's listening to this and is like scared or like scared for the future, I think the thing, and listen to the crazy guy. Like I'm the fucking crazy guy, right? I'm the one who has, been locked up multiple times for having psychotic breakdowns. But I think it's really important to have vision. I think it's really important to have positive visions and to like know what it is that you want. Like we could talk about all the things that we don't want. Yeah, we don't want camps, where people are rounded up and but I mean it's just like I'm so absurd. But the important thing is what do we want? What do we want? Like figure out what you want and then find some other people that want it too, and then get together and hang out with them.
Rather be a soldier.
That's the end of today's episode of Exiles in the City. I want to thank my guests for joining me and thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast episode, please subscribe to the Substack to be informed of when future episodes are released. Please spread the word. Thank you and stay strong.